from pop culture to politics, this is The Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where I do believe that the debates last night among the 12 Democratic candidates who qualified for this October debate, that those debates have made an outcome at the convention a little bit more clear. How? I will get to that in just a moment. There are some more highlights and very much lowlights from the debate last night. What was fascinating about it was, for the first time, there were real and harsh disagreements on policy, which I think is frankly good for Democrats in this sense. It indicates that the party is not monochromatically completely crazy. They didn't talk about the crazy stuff. They didn't talk about reparations, which they all seem to be for. They didn't talk about gun confiscation. Well, Beto did. And they didn't talk about basically totally opening up the border and making it totally legal to enter the United States without proper documentation. And none of the, or the Green New Deal. That wasn't there, though, of course, Bernie kept saying, talking about what an existential threat climate change was. Now, what was the problem there? Problem there was that Anderson Cooper and Aaron Burnett and Lacey from the New York Times, the three moderators, chose not to ask about the crazy stuff. And, I mean, truly, this is one of the reasons that they escaped sounding, well, a little bit more plausible than at past debates, do you think? Here was Amy Klobuchar, who I think was one of the two stars of the debate, who helped herself. And she basically has a one-state campaign right now. She's at 1% in the national polls, if that. But she does have a campaign going on in Iowa. She has a campaign staff in Iowa. And being next door in Minnesota, she's trying, as Michelle Bachmann did, remember, in the Republican nomination fight in 2012, Michelle Bachmann, another Minnesota candidate, was trying to use her proximity to Minnesota. And Michelle Bachmann was actually a native of Iowa. She had been born in Iowa. Didn't help her. But Amy Klobuchar ended her debate performance with this closing statement. Listen.
This isn't a flyover part of the country to me. The heartland is where I live. And I want to win those states that we lost last time. And I have bold ideas to get us there. And I think just because they're different than Elizabeth doesn't mean they're bold. But we can't get any of this done on climate change or immigration reform unless they win. And what I have done is win, and the only one up here, time and time again, the reddest of red districts, Michelle Bachmann's. I won that district three times. Rural districts that border Iowa and North and South Dakota. And I do it by going not just where it's comfortable, but where it's uncomfortable. And that is why I have been in Pennsylvania and in Michigan and in Wisconsin and all over Ohio and in Iowa. Because I think we need to build a blue Democratic wall around those states and make Donald Trump pay for it.
That was Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. And she, again, fumbled words, as Joe Biden did, which she meant to say, the fact that my ideas are not the same as Elizabeth's are doesn't mean they're not bold. That's what she was meant to say. What she said is, the idea that my ideas are different from Elizabeth's doesn't mean they're bold. Huh? Okay. Reasonably effective performance. And where does all this leave us? There's this piece at CNN about the money. And the money is under the headline, "The Worst News for Joe Biden Tuesday Evening." And Chris Saliza writes, "Why should these numbers cause panic, or at least real concern for Joe Biden? After all, money isn't everything, and in politics, Donald Trump won the Republican primary in 2016, spending a trifle of what people like Jeb Bush and even Ted Cruz and Chris Christie did. True, money isn't always determinative. But what fundraising does signal, especially in a crowded and uncertain field with a few months left before anybody actually votes, is momentum and organic energy. Think about it. Taking some of your hard-earned cash and giving it to a candidate is one of the strongest signs of support you could possibly offer. You are saying, in essence, I believe in this person so much that I am willing to invest in him or her. That's a big deal. So Biden's total cash haul, $15.7 million, isn't great. He was outraised by Sanders, Warren, and Buttigieg. By big time, by like $10 million each. But his burn rate, the amount he spent, is even more concerning. Biden spent about $17.6 million, meaning $2 million more went out than came in, which is not a good sign. Does it mean Joe Biden's campaign is over? Nope. Why not? Because here's the basic truth about the Democratic race that, again, everyone needs to remember. And as this race continues and as it heats up and as it goes up and down and this one and that one and back and forth and the firing back and forth, keep this in mind. In the Democratic rules for this nomination, there are no more winner-take-all states. It used to be you win a big state like California, wow, you're a fourth of the way to the nomination. But that's not the case anymore. Everything is proportional. And my very strong guess is, especially given the fact that all the reports show that the two strongest campaigns on the ground in Iowa are Pete Buttigieg in particular and Elizabeth Warren. They are virtually certain to come out of Iowa with some delegates. So is Bernie Sanders. So is Joe Biden. So probably is Amy Klobuchar. And I think that it is entirely possible that this race is going to go into the convention with no clear winner. We haven't had that. We haven't had a single convention that has gone more than one ballot since 1952. It's been a very long time. And then what happens at the convention? Who knows? One thing that happens is on the second ballot, if they have a second ballot, that's when the superdelegates kick in, the people who are there at the convention, not because they have been selected in caucuses or in primaries, but because they are party officials and they are institutionalists and they are part of the party establishment. That it seems to me, is what is likely, given the fact that there are enough of these candidates, by the way, including Kamala Harris, who's been okay in the fundraising department, despite the fact that she's fallen in the polls. Could Kamala Harris last until the California primary on March 3rd? Sure. Could she win some delegates in California? Sure. Meanwhile, there is somebody who probably will not be there at the end, who I think is likely to leave after Iowa. Who is that? Former congressman named Beto O'Rourke, who was trying to make a name for himself as being the most radical opponent of Second Amendment rights among the Democrats. And the competition's intense, but I think Beto O'Rourke wins the prize here. Listen.
Your website says you will find people who don't give up their weapons. That doesn't take those weapons off the street. So to be clear, exactly how are you going to take away weapons from people who do not want to give them up and you don't know where they are?
If someone does not turn in an AR-15 or an AK-47, one of these weapons of war, or brings it out in public and brandishes it in an attempt to intimidate, as we saw when we were at Kent State recently, then that weapon will be taken from them. If they persist, there will be other consequences from law enforcement. But the expectation is that Americans will follow the law. I believe in this country. I believe in my fellow Americans. I believe that they will do the right thing.
Here is the idiocy of what he's saying. He believes people will follow the law. In other words, if he believes people will follow the law to give up guns that they have paid for and that they own perfectly legally, if he believes they'll follow that law, why does he not trust them to follow the law not to shoot people with the guns? In other words, AR-15s in the hands of law-abiding people who follow laws are not a danger. AR-15s in the hands of criminals and thugs are a terrible danger. And frankly, if Democrats actually wanted to make some progress on the issue of crime, where the general crime statistics in the country, we had a good year. And again, President Trump can claim some credit for it because he's shown good support for police departments. But we had a decline nationally in the murder rate of 6.8% in this last year. That's 2018 as opposed to 2017. It's a big decline. Now, a couple of cities, it was worse. Baltimore's a disaster. But if you want to make progress in cities like that, focus on getting guns away from criminals, not from law-abiding citizens where you're so confident they're going to follow the law. Beto was also talking about his gun buyback program with Allison Camerata of CNN. Listen.
I fully expect my fellow Americans to follow the law.
You expect mass shooters to follow the law?
Our fellow Americans will follow the law, yes.
Congressman, mass shooters in Parkland, in El Paso, I could go on for 10 minutes. They don't follow the law by definition.
There are so many instances where the proposals that we've made, whether it is a universal background check or a red flag law or ending the sale of weapons of war or buying those that are out there back, would have stopped many of the shootings that we see in a country that loses 40,000 people a year to gun violence. Would it stop every single shooting? No, but that should be no excuse for not taking action now while we have the opportunity to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And we also shouldn't be limited by the politics or the conventional political wisdom or the polling or the consultant class or the NRA decisive action.
The stupidity, you'll notice he completely dodged the question and the challenge, which is an obvious challenge. If you're going to be a mass shooter, if you're planning to go into a school or a church or a shopping center or a Walmart or anywhere and start shooting people, why do you have confidence that such a person will follow the law? Yeah, I'm willing to go off and murder my neighbors, but, oh, I guess a new law that I have to give up my guns? Sure. Here you go, Beto, President Beto. We give up our guns. The conversation continued on CNN.
Just tell us how it works. You're going to go to if somebody doesn't voluntarily hand over their assault weapon, you're going to go to their house, and then what?
If we pass this law, then I expect our fellow Americans to follow the law. And this is not speculation. We've seen other countries do this, like Australia.
Law-abiding people follow the law, but our problem is with mass shooters who don't.
Okay, and our problem also is he keeps using this number 40,000 gun deaths. Okay, almost three quarters of those gun deaths are suicides. As a two thirds of those gun deaths are suicides. The majority of them are suicides. People do not use AR-15s to commit suicide. I know somebody's going to write in and say, oh, there was this one case where somebody, you don't use a formidable weapon. People use pistols. That's what they do. Now, do I think it's worthwhile to try to prevent people who are mentally disturbed and suicidal, who have suicidal ideation? Do I think it's worthwhile to try to keep guns away from them? Sure. But Beto, this stupidity about, oh yeah, people go along with my gun buyback scheme because they're law-abiding, and that's why we have to make sure that we take dangerous guns away from them is because they're law-abiding. This is idiocy. And it's one of the reasons that I don't think that Beto will be one of the five or maybe six Democrats who make it all the way to the convention. Jay in Everett, Washington. Hello, Jay. You're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hey, Michael. I've been with you since day one. So I want to straighten you out on something. I'm former military, but I've listened to guys that are in the military now. And that have spent time over there in Syria. And here's the reason. Here's what's going on in that situation where Trump's pulling all 27 troops out or whatever it is. Okay, here's what's going on. We made an agreement with the Kurds that we would assist them in destroying ISIS, rounding them up, killing them, whatever we had to do. that mission is completed. That mission we've accomplished. So now it's time for us to leave. That was the agreement. We're not permanent bodyguards of the Kurds. That wasn't the mission. The mission was to help them subdue ISIS. It's done.
Yeah, now again, I don't think the problem here is not the withdrawal of 1,000 troops, because when you're talking about the Turkish army, which is formidable, 1,000 American troops, even if they're special operators, let alone the 48 or the 27 that we're talking about now moving around, that's not going to make the difference. The difference is America's commitment to provide aerial cover, to provide logistical help.
Our commitment was to smash ISIS and then get out. That was our word to them. That was our agreement.
Okay, how do you know? In other words,
how do I know that that was our agreement? Well,
yes.
Because I've listened to plenty of military men that have been over there.
Okay, I understand, but there is no, when you have an alliance with people and they're doing, in other words, their war against ISIS, yes, it definitely benefited them, but it enormously benefited us, and they lost 11,000 people. The question is, and when you say our mission is over, there's still at least 10,000 ISIS fighters who are now being turned loose. And General Mazlum, the Kurdish, Syrian Kurdish general, has said that's no longer guarding them is no longer our top priority. And that's obviously the case.
How long do you believe we should be there, Michael?
When you say be there, we have a very, very, as you know, limited military presence in Syria. It's extremely limited.
We're going to have none.
What's that?
And now we're going to have none.
Correct. But the problem is we still have air resources, and that was what we denied our Kurdish allies. The problem is that this letter that President Trump sent to Erdogan, which is an embarrassment. What's that?
I like that letter. I think he's right on target there.
Okay. Do you think it's appropriate? Do you think it's appropriate for the president of the United States to address a NATO ally with "Let's work out a good deal"? You don't want to be responsible for slaughtering thousands of people. I mean, to put this,
he's trying to encourage him to back off.
I understand that he was trying to encourage him, but it obviously wasn't very effective. And to talk about
So
we are not very effective. So now you allow the Turks to go ahead and slaughter people?
Should we just stay there for 500 years?
It's not a question of staying there. We have military resources there and air resources. And by the way, when you say stay here there for 500 years, do you think we should be withdrawing our troops from South Korea? We have 27,000 troops in South Korea.
Look, what if our jets fly over and a SAM takes out one or two of our jets and our pilots go down and then they are tortured and shown on TV?
Okay,
I don't want that to happen.
I don't think that we are at risk of having air resources. And by the way, which also keeps the Russians out of that situation. And look, when you talk about keeping people there forever, we have 27,000 troops in South Korea. And if you talk to people who look at military strategy, those 27,000 troops are the best investment we could possibly make. Because I know that right now the news is that Kim Jong-un dressed up in a fur coat and went up to the sacred mountain where the human race began, apparently. And he is getting ready for some gigantic announcement. Maybe he's going to do another summit with President Trump, maybe at the summit of this sacred mountain. Who knows? But we will talk not about that, but talk about an epic event on American television. A game show contestant goes on and says he's trapped in a loveless marriage. Why is this a thing? We will get to the latest on the Wheel of Fortune scandal coming up. Sometimes people need to get a handle on things when they're intended as a joke. And yes, sometimes that involves President Trump. President Trump sent out a tweet that said, anyone who wants to assist Syria in protecting the Kurds is good with me, whether it is Russia, China, or Napoleon Bonaparte. I hope they all do great. We are 7,000 miles away! Exclamation point. Wall Street Journal comments, we suppose the Napoleon line was a joke, but the world is laughing at an American president. Mr. Trump was able to project an image of strength in his early days as he prosecuted the war against ISIS and used force to impose a cost on Mr. Assad for using chemical weapons. Remember that? President Trump was widely praised, including on this show, for responding in a way and a more forceful way than President Obama had. But that image has faded as he has indulged his inner Rand Paul, writes the Wall Street Journal, and claims at every opportunity that the main goal of his foreign policy is to put an end to endless wars. The idea is that turning away from war, as history has shown again and again, sometimes actually provokes it. And speaking of not being able to recognize a joke, there's an issue on Wheel of Fortune. Now, I will confess I have not been an avid fan of Wheel of Fortune over the years. I'm certainly very aware of it. And Pat Sajak, by the way, I salute Pat Sajak for a strong support of Hillsdale College, where he's been very involved in supporting Hillsdale, and good for him. In any event, there was a contestant on Wheel of Fortune who created a viral sensation. The contestant appeared on October 14th, just 2 days ago, and his name was Blair Davis. And his appearance sounded like this.
Hello, Blair.
Hello.
Blair Davis, Cardiff, California. Own the trucking business, it says here.
Small trucking business in San Diego.
Good for you. And talk about your family.
I've been trapped in a loveless marriage for the last 12 years to an old battle axe named Kim. She cursed my life with three stepchildren named Star, RJ, and Ryan, and I have one rotten grandson.
Yay!
Okay, the gentleman, Blair Davis, is bald with a heavy beard, and this has caused a sensation because it's obviously so different from expectations. Somebody does not come on a program and say, I've been cursed in a loveless marriage with an old battle axe. The conversation, which was not released in its entirety originally, actually continues. Listen.
No wonder you came here. You just wanted to get away from everybody. I know you're being facetious.
Absolutely. I love them like nobody's business.
I'll bet you do. What's the story of the beard and your grandson?
I started growing the beard a couple of years back, and every time I threaten to shave it off, he gives me a really hard time.
Yeah, so it's going to stay, apparently.
He's grown used to it.
Okay, good to have you. Don't get it tangled up in the wheel. That's all we ask. All right, everybody, we'll do another toss-up. This is where...
Okay, that's Blair Davis, who actually is not trapped in a loveless marriage. He loves them like nobody's business. Glad for the reassurance. And maybe it's an indication that if you're intending something as a joke, then you should make sure that people are in on it. According to The Hill, there's a poll that has just been taken. 57% of Republicans say they approve of Trump's Syria withdrawal. More than half of Republicans agree with President Trump's decision to pull troops out of northeastern Syria, according to a New Economist YouGov weekly tracking poll. Of respondents who self-identified as Republicans, 25% said they strongly approve of the troop withdrawal, while 32% say they somewhat approve. A combined 26% of the Republican respondents said they disapprove on some level, while 18% had no opinion. What do I think that indicates? The fact that President Trump, as all the polls regularly show, has very, very strong support from the Republican base. But the idea that we can definitively say that this was a good decision at this point, where are the indications so far that decision is working out on behalf of American interests or anyone? And that brings us to our tweet of the day.
Turn the page now to the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
Okay, actually, two tweets by Senator Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, one pertaining to the Syria matter. Senator Graham says President Trump is being told exactly what President Obama was told before he withdrew from Iraq. He appears to be hell-bent on making the same mistakes in Syria as President Obama made in Iraq. And those mistakes in Iraq led to the emergence of ISIS in Iraq, let alone the problem that we have right now with 10,000 ISIS prisoners facing potential liberation because of an American decision. In a more good-humored nature, Lindsey Graham also tweeted this: listening to Democrats talk about how to create more jobs would be like buying a book of manners written by President Donald Trump. Not a good idea. All right. Seems like the beautiful friendship between President Obama and Lindsey Graham may be hitting a few speed bumps. Did I say President Obama? I did. I'm so sorry. President Trump. I don't think there was ever any friendship between President Obama and Lindsey Graham, who supported President Obama, Lindsey, on just about nothing. By the way, Lindsey Graham was one of the impeachment managers against President Bill Clinton. He led the impeachment fight along with Henry Hyde of the Judiciary Committee. This is when he was in the House of Representatives. He led the impeachment fight as a former prosecutor against President Clinton. It didn't work. I think this impeachment fight is also extremely unlikely to work in terms of either political impact or removing President Trump from office. Scott in North Bend, Washington. Scott, you're on the MedVed Show.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
Doing okay.
Nice. Yeah, I want to throw the argument out there, the traditional argument. I haven't been hearing it much lately. The founders, you know, they say, shall not infringe. And I don't know what else they would mean by that. I think
shall not infringe the right of the people to keep and bear arms?
Yes, that's right. And what they really meant by it was that you cannot permanently obstruct someone's avenue to owning a weapon and using it in self-defense. It doesn't matter if it was a corrupt government official trying to hurt them, or it could be anybody. It doesn't matter. We have a right to bear arms. By the way,
the Supreme Court agreed with you in the Heller case.
Right, right.
But that doesn't mean you have a right to get any weapon you want under any circumstances.
I think you like my point. I think you really like it. Basically, you cannot take this right away because you have to have a two-thirds. You have to ratify the Constitution or 3/4 of the state. The founders did this on purpose. So all I'm trying to say is Beto is the one that's not following the law. These people that want to do this and go around the process that was put out by the founders to do these things, they refuse to do that because they know that they can't pull it off.
Okay, I think just as bad policy, we're able to defeat the idiotic ideas of the likes of Beto O'Rourke, aside from the constitutional guarantee to own weapons for self-defense. That's not necessarily applying to AR-15s, by the way. We'll be right back on the MedVed Show. Uh-oh, breaking news. The president is meddling very directly in foreign elections. No, not that president, not President Trump. It's President Obama. The former president just sent out a tweet. And everything is through tweet now, all these important proclamations. President Obama tweets, "I was proud to work with Justin Trudeau as president. He's a hardworking, effective leader who takes on big issues like climate change. The world needs his progressive leadership now, and I hope our neighbors to the north support him for another term. I think that's extraordinary. Of course, everyone assumes President Obama leans to the left, as Justin Trudeau very much does. The recent polling from Canada shows that Andrew Scheer, leader of the Tories, the Conservatives, will be the next prime minister. It's still close. And the crucial thing is that people in Canada should support, I hope and pray, Andrew Scheer and the Tories and the Conservative Party as an alternative to this misrule that they've experienced under Justin Trudeau. And no, it's not just about the blackface issue. It's about his completely incurable leftism. Speaking of incurable leftism, there is a piece, and it's a good piece, in the Wall Street Journal from Bobby Jindal, former governor of Louisiana. And he writes, Trump wins every Democratic debate. And he writes, the Republican National Committee should offer to be the official sponsor of a weekly Democratic presidential debate. There would be no better advertisement for President Trump's reelection. Every time the Democratic presidential contenders gather together, it's a contest between the merely delusional, the vaguely vindictive, and the patently absurd. There are funny moments like when Andrew Yang risked the ire of the political correct police and told us, I am Asian, so I know a lot of doctors. By the way, what was the deal last night with the math pin? If anybody knows, call me, because I couldn't figure it out. If for people who did not watch the debates, Andrew Yang didn't have an American flag lapel pin. He had a big lapel pin that said math. And I know, yesterday was math day? Well, great. Better that they should honor math day rather than pronoun day. And this is incredible because today is pronoun day, and this is a reason why, honestly, you talk about the Democrats losing any chance to defeat Trump. This former Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro was the first 2020 Democratic presidential candidate to mark International Pronoun Day Wednesday. That's today. Using someone's correct pronouns and giving your own isn't difficult. I'm Julian Castro, he, him, él. Castro tweeted. Of course, he put in the Spanish.
I believe in reproductive justice.
It takes one extra breath to help people feel seen and respected, he said. I think that's worth it. Hashtag pronoun day. Someone reminded us that it really is hard for some people and can trigger anxiety or dysphoria. I'm grateful to learn how to be more inclusive of people of all genders. Castro also tweeted, on NPR, they were honoring Pronouns Day. They had a broadcast that featured a large company, I forget which it was, that was imposing a pronoun quota where they were going to say half of employees were going to be assigned female pronouns and half would be assigned male pronouns, 40% of each, but with 20% of neither. Just people really believe there are 20% of Americans who are non-binary? Castro was not the only 2020 candidate to embrace introducing himself with his pronouns. Senators Cory Booker, of course, Democrat New Jersey, Kamala Harris, Democrat California, and Elizabeth Warren, Democrat Massachusetts, along with businessman Tom Steyer, all include the pronouns in their bios on Twitter. Charlotte Clymer, press secretary for Rapid Response at the Human Rights Campaign, tweeted that South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg also included his pronouns in his Twitter bio, although it was not immediately clear when the pronouns were added. International Pronoun Day was marked Wednesday to make respecting, sharing, and educating about personal pronouns commonplace. Do we have enough confusions in the world today, really, without having to add the pronoun confusion? Well, congratulations to Julian Castro. I'm glad they did this. Is that what we're supposed to do? They? No, he prefers he. I'm glad he did this. He, him, L. I'm glad L did this. Speaking of something that may not make you so glad, the number two movie in the country right now, number one movie is still Joker. It's doing unbelievable business. But also doing decent business is a new movie with Will Smith. It is a sci-fi thriller, kind of, sort of. It is called Gemini Man. But is it worth seeing? Here's the full, frank, and fearless review.
Now, it's time for Medvid on Movies.
Will Smith plays an expert government assassin who wants to retire but then must confront a clone who's a younger version of himself in Gemini Man.
25 years ago, he took my blood. He made you from me. He's been lying to you the whole time. And of all the people in the world to come after me, why would he send you?
The clone, actually, is a digitally altered motion capture version of the real Will Smith. So the movie unfolds, if you'll pardon the expression, as a contest of wills. But there's also a diabolical bad guy played by Clive Owen, and a sympathetic intelligence agent and possible love interest played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
The whole point of this thing was to give you all of Henry's gifts without his pain.
Henry, has this ever happened to you before? Your own government trying to kill you?
Nah, that's new.
Everything that we've worked for is at stake. Look what we created.
You should be flattered.
What if somebody actually knew what we really are?
Technically, this film is often dazzling, with the young double of Will Smith uncannily convincing. But the plot makes absolutely no sense. You never understand why the main character's former associates in the intelligence community are so desperately eager to kill him. The director, amazingly enough, is Ang Lee, who won two Oscars for Brokeback Mountain and Life of Pi. But this film falls far short of that sort of artistry or intensity, crippled by clunky dialogue and long fight scenes that have none of the coherence or impact of Ang Lee's early masterpiece, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's rated PG-13 for abundant action scenes, also available in 3D, and fleeting references, that's all, to sexuality. 2 stars for Gemini Man. Like the title, the movie is never quite embarrassing, but distinctly unsatisfying.
For more movie reviews, go to michaelmedved.com.
Yeah, the title Gemini Man is supposed to derive from this super secret government project that develops these clones. Get it? Gemini, the twins, right? Isn't that right? Astrological signs, aficionados, but nothing to do with astrology or science here in particular. Speaking of science, there is a new effort in the state of California to make it illegal to shame kids. Well, shame kids about what? About not paying for their school lunches. So if you can't shame kids and treat them differently from not paying, why should anyone pay? And then a leading Hollywood actress says that women don't have the same rights as men, according to the United States Constitution. What? We will get to that and much more next time in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.